Stuck in traffic and need to vent? Dial the fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
Oh, now you got a real challenge for me. You ready to embarrass myself?
You need fooling. Baby, I'm not fooling. I'm gonna take ya down to schooling.
I don't know the words that good.
Honey, you and me. I'm gonna give you my love.
All right. 888-808-1019. Oh!
Want a whole lot of love.
Mick Monaco here with you on this Tuesday morning in the wake of a rough loss for the New York Jets as they were just absolutely manhandled by a clearly better team. That's what happened last night to the New York Jets. The defense didn't show up. The run game, even without Christian McCaffrey of the 49ers, just completely dominated the football game. They dominated time of possession. The Jets defense just, specifically the run defense, didn't show up. And yes, the other angle of this game is that the pass rush wasn't there. Was it 34 dropbacks, no pressures? They didn't get after Brock Purdy at all, which leads to the conversation about Hassan Reddick. And he's the one holdout still holding out. And it's the one that never made any sense to me, really. But Hassan Reddick was playing this game where he was banking on the idea of the Jets getting off to a rough start. That's the only leverage he had left. The only leverage he had left was he knew they were going to go play the San Francisco 49ers week one, and that if they got off to a terrible start, if the defense didn't play well, that he could use this as some sort of leverage to say, hey, and I get it, because right now that is going to be the conversation, because right now, hey, this is your year with Aaron Rodgers, right? This is an all-in make-break careers, jobs. Like, this is, you have to go out there and win this year. And you didn't get after Brock Purdy at all in this game. And I think some of that has to do with the idea that they couldn't stop the run. But I don't know how much Hassan Reddick helps in this game last night. Now, that doesn't change the narrative that, hey, you need your best defensive team out there, and there's a guy that you traded for sitting over there who's got as many sacks as anybody in the NFL over the last 4 years. You brought him in for a reason. You lost Huff. You lost, you know, different guys from last year's defense. It's not the exact same defense. And you need as many good players as you can have, and you just got embarrassed by the 49ers. So there's no doubt the narrative absolutely went in favor of Hassan Reddick. But if you really look at the game from me, I don't think Hassan Reddick makes a major difference in this game for the Jets. And that's not the be-all, end-all, because I do think you need the best players, and eventually he's going to have to come to some sort of conclusion and show up. But as the schedule turns to easier teams, I don't think Hassan Reddick, looking at that game yesterday, is the difference maker. Now, hey, anything can happen. He gets back, makes a sack, causes a fumble. Maybe it does change the game around. There is a chance that one play could change a game. Yes, they were dominated, but you get after Brock Purdy and cause a fumble instead of a third down conversion. Maybe that does dramatically change the outcome of the football game. But I thought they got completely, thoroughly outplayed, and Hassan Reddick wouldn't make a difference. And I still think the Jets, if they've gone this far, one loss to the San Francisco 49ers is not going to suddenly have Joe Douglas groveling back to Hassan Reddick. I just don't see it. I really don't see it. If they haven't felt that way yet, I don't think one loss. Now, if they lose to Tennessee, if they lose to Tennessee and don't get a pass rush, if they lose to Tennessee and Pollard is running all over the place, if they lose to Tennessee and Will Levis is throwing the ball all over the place and can't get and doesn't get put on his ass at all, now you're having a conversation about a season that's 0-2. And now you've lost a game you're not expected to lose. And maybe that will change things. But honestly, for me, looking at this team, I don't think suddenly that the Jets will or should go run into Hassan Reddick off of one loss to the San Francisco 49ers. Like, I think we're underestimating how good this team is. And maybe I did so, and the rest of us pundits did so when they were picking the Jets. And I know a lot of people were on the Jets at 4.5. I love that number. I was all over them. I thought it'd be a good game. I didn't think they would necessarily go out there and beat the 49ers, but I thought they were right there. I thought that the New York Jets were ready to hang with the San Francisco 49ers. I did. They're not. They're not right now. The defense isn't. Even the offense that I feel okay about. He made it through the game. He had moments where he looked at Aaron Rodgers. I felt pretty good about it. He missed some throws. You just heard in the cut that he played, that Marco played at the top of the hour. He wasn't perfect. But again, he didn't really have that many opportunities. They dominated the... Now, part of it is the punt, the three and outs, and the drop pass by Lazard, who it's hard to kill him after that. He ends up getting two touchdowns. But, I mean, that's a devastating drop right there. You're about to... You know, you got to try and go down the field. You got the ball to start the game. You got an easy first down. You got to make that play and see what that offense could have done. And then, obviously, the Breece Hall fumble in the second drive. I mean, they didn't get off to a great start offensively. But I thought... You saw enough. He made it through healthy, took some hits. Where I'm ready to see what this team can do next week before I'm, you know, running to sign a deal with Hassan Reddick that I've been reluctant to do all offseason long. So we'll see exactly what happens with that situation. And sure, there's going to be clamoring for it. I heard a caller calling to Keith about it. You're going to hear all week, all day long today, all week long. You got to get Hassan Reddick in the room. You got to get Hassan Reddick. He would really help out. Brock Purdy went untouched. Again, it's one of the better offensive lines in the sport. And you got beat by a team that's been dominant and beat almost everybody they've played over the last 3 years. That's the most difficult and best opponent they're going to play all year long. I believe it's better than Buffalo. It's better than Miami. That's the best team. They are right there. The two best teams in the NFL are last year's Super Bowl teams, the Kansas City Chiefs and the San Francisco 49ers. 888-808-1019. Let's get to the calls. Stu in Brooklyn. What's up, Stuart?
Morning, Chris.
Good morning. How are you?
Phil looked like a 40-year-old quarterback. How are you going to expect him to avoid the rush? And they're going to fumble the ball. And if the defense doesn't show up, how is it going to work? It's not going to work.
Yeah, but that happened. All those things you just said happened in one game against arguably the best team in the NFL.
Right. Yeah, you're right. And you can't.
Like, I mean, the idea that you just said, if they can't run the football like they struggled last night and they can't stop the run defensively like they struggled last night, then yeah, you're right. They're going to lose a lot of games. I mean, I don't expect that to continue every night, every week.
No, like you said, it's probably the best team in the NFL. And you can, and the defense has to get better. They have to get with it because they didn't even get one pressure on Brock Purdy.
No, they got no pressure on Purdy. They actually put Williams on the outside to try and, you know, change things up and get some one-on-ones for him. They got beat by a very good team, and they were out. And listen, it's on the coach too. Seemed like the defensively at least they weren't ready to show up and play football. They just were.
Yeah, they weren't. All right, so that getting to the Yankees for one point, it's
sure.
About time he's up.
Yep.
I mean, they have to let him play. Okay, hit a home run. But Chris, did you see Saturday afternoon where he almost got thrown out at first base?
Yes.
Where he wandered almost there. You know what? One of the announcers said they should have called him out just to spite it.
Yeah.
I mean, what was he doing?
Yeah, I mean, it was a boneheaded play, but again, he almost got thrown out.
Yeah, almost. He was safe, clearly safe. But somebody said they should have called him out.
I don't know why he went that far. I think he thought they were losing it in the sun or something. I have no idea why he was that far off.
No, but there's one thing. That center fielder, he's got some arm. That ball was right there on one hop.
Yeah. Pete Crow Armstrong, he had a couple of drops because of the sun and the wind. It was a windy, it was a weird series.
It was the
first series since 2014 that the Yankees had played in where neither them nor their opponent hit a home run. Like, it was just the wind prevented a bunch of home runs. The wind played, the wind and sun had a lot to do with pop-ups dropping, and it was just a weird, weird, weird series in Chicago. And ultimately, the pitching has just been great. And if we're going to get to baseball, but you did say something about, I just want to say something about Jason Dominguez. I've been clamoring for Jason Dominguez to be up here, screaming about it. That it makes no sense. How could you possibly like him better than Verdugo? When Cashman came out and made those comments last week about, they still believe in Verdugo. They believe that's the best interest of the team. And they're not ready to call up Jason Dominguez until he's ready to play every day, which I agreed with on that angle. I don't want him to come up and be Grisham. Like, I know BT is in favor of it, and some Yankee fans are in. Hey, just call him up, and he'll play sporadically, and he'll play so well that they'll be forced to play him more or whatever the fuck. I don't want that. I want Jason Dominguez to be up here and be the everyday outfielder. Like, I want him to play every day. So I understood not calling him up until you were ready, but it made no sense that they weren't ready. But here's the point. He's up here now. They're going to play him every day. They've got 3 weeks to get him, acclimated and ready to go for playoff time. They are going to have right now their best roster available for the postseason. That's all I wanted. I wanted it, you want to chase a division, no doubt. But like the amount of people, and this is where I'll get in trouble. You ready for the McMonagle? I'm going to get Zach or someone to do a sounder. The McMonagle Yankee shill take of the day. Stop getting mad even when the Yankees do what you want. Like, I can't tell you how many people hit me up, friends included, not just people on Twitter, and are still mad about him being called up today. Instead of being excited that Jason Dominguez is part of the team, the reaction is, why didn't it happen 2 weeks ago? Why did you apparently lie to us 2 days ago? Why is Verdugo still in the lineup? Why is someone like Verdugo who's blocking Jason Dominguez, you're telling me Verdugo's too good to have Jason Dominguez come up here, and yet he's hitting sixth and Verdugo's hitting ninth? Like, stop focusing on the negative all the time. Like, that's all you focus on. Jason Dominguez gets called up and it's like, well, great, why wasn't it 2 weeks ago? You know what? I agree with you, but he's here now. And there's plenty of time. And he immediately brought a little bit of life and some juice. He stole a base, and that's kind of, I'm going to call it the Chaz Chisholm play, because it's happened a bunch. But even Aaron Judge got in the mix with stealing third base and having the ball get thrown away and scoring a run. The Yankees have actually manufactured a bunch of runs on the base path for all you they can't manufacture runs crowd. But he came in, he got a hit. He's able to get Judge off his feet by playing center field. He steals a base, scores a run on an overthrow. And, of course, he pushed. And is the narrative that every fan wants to take credit for, because they've been saying it, that him being there pushed Verdugo into hitting that home run. That the idea of, hey, now my job is really at stake, so I've decided to hit a home run. And it's about time the Yankees understood that, and competition breeds this stuff and blah, blah, blah. Which I don't think anyone disagrees with, competition breeds the best out of people. And that they should be competition. And Verdugo should not feel so confident that he doesn't have an ability to just play forever and suck and not lose his time. But do you want Jason Dominguez to be called up just to be a placebo for Verdugo? Like, is that what the Yankees should have done? Should the Yankees have called up Dominguez, put him on the bench just to get the best of Verdugo? They're calling him up now when they're ready for him to take Verdugo's place. And that better still happen. It didn't happen last night. He got called up, yes. He's in the lineup, yes. We're told he's going to play a lot, yes. Verdugo was still in the lineup last night, and he hit a two-run home run. But he's here. There's time. They did the right thing. And I'm excited about what could happen with this team now. And they obviously answer with 10 runs. They beat up on the Royals. They pick up a game on the lousy Baltimore Orioles, who dropped a game getting pounded by the Boston Red Sox. And for me, the story with this team and the Mets, which I'll get to here next, we'll do a little baseball right now, has been the pitching. Because even though it was a wild, wacky series where home runs were blown back because of the wind in Chicago and three straight day games and, sun and wind and everything else that hampered a lot of the offense, this Yankee team now has pitched excellent. It's turned it around over this recent stretch. And they moved, they got Hamilton back last night. They moved Holmes out of the closer role. And even though Weaver has been a little bit shaky, got through it. Can't argue, can't complain. He's been great. And we'll see how they use Clay Holmes. I thought they might have closed them last night if they, the game didn't break. It would have been funny. But the Yankees scored a bunch of runs and made that point moot. But last night, for me and the New York Yankees, that was the best Carlos Rodon start of the year for me. That was the most satisfying. That was a start that made me feel better about him getting a playoff start, which it's a fait accompli. He is going to get playoff starts. It's the most impressive start for me from Carlos Rodon for one simple reason. He had mistakes made behind him left and right. And what we have seen from Carlos Rodon is implosion when things go wrong. Implosion when an error is made. The first pitch of the game is an easy ground ball to Jazz Chisholm. And he throws it in the dirt, and Rizzo's unable to make the play. And so now you've got a runner on first when you've gotten an easy ground ball. That's the kind of thing that has spiraled innings out of control for Carlos Rodon. Then on a stolen base attempt, the ball is thrown into center field, and now you have a runner on third. And yes, he gives up the base hit to allow that runner, no doubt, but that's where he ended it. That's where he ended it. Then you got the drop pop-up that gives up a run later in the game from Gleyber Torres, which, by the way, we can all blame Gleyber all we want. The right fielder should call in and take charge of that play and call. He's been, what I thought, a great start to the year defensively for Soto, has become miserable. But he had a drop pop-up with two outs that allowed a runner to score from first base, and he ended it right there. He gave up two solo home runs in six innings, struck out nine batters, and he had opportunities to let the game get out of control for him, and he didn't. And he didn't. And you can't say it's the Kansas City Royals. That's a playoff team, brother. This is a team going to the postseason. This could be a postseason matchup. They have the runner-up MVP on this team. They have Salvador Perez with damn near 100 RBIs. They have played very well. They pitch very well. And this has been a playoff team pretty much wire to wire. And he went out there and they made mistake after mistake behind him. And typically, he unravels. And last night, he held his composure. He spotted his fastball. He got his breaking ball over, and he gave you six good, solid innings. And that's what I need to see. Because when things go perfect, we've seen that he can make it through a start. But when balls are dropped and errors are made and infield singles and rollers or the pitch comm isn't working or whatever the case may be, he unravels. And last night, he didn't. Last night, he continued to pitch his game, got through, gave the Yankees an opportunity to win, even with all the mistakes behind him, and eventually the offense came through. And Wells hits a bomb of a three-run home run, and he's been unbelievable. He's the best offensive catcher in the sport for the last three months or so. He's been a revelation at cleanup, which he has the second-best OPS at cleanup in all of baseball. When he hits cleanup, he's the second-best cleanup hitter in the sport this year, behind Rooker in Oakland. Now, that doesn't make him the best hitter. The best hitters don't hit cleanup anymore. But still, middle of your lineup, protection for Aaron Judge. He's doing it better than anybody in baseball. So a good win for the Yankees. They bounce back. They get another victory. They are now a game and a half up on the Baltimore Orioles. And then the Mets, who gain a game on Atlanta, I mean, the pitching, same thing in Toronto. They didn't do anything offensively until the end of the game. Didn't do anything when Toronto decided to just have wild pitch after wild pitch after wild pitch. But right now, the starting pitching for the Mets, they're supposed to go back to their guy coming off the IL, and you have to make, McGill has to make a spot start, and McGill gives you six one-hit innings with nine strikeouts. I mean, it doesn't matter who they throw up right now. This Met team has been so uber impressive. and they're doing it with their starting pitching. The offense has cooled off a little bit. Yeah, I know they had the walk-off home run, and, you know, Lindor's cooled off slightly. It's hard to even say that, but it's been a handful of games. He's cooled off a little bit. But, like, and he didn't get any hits in this game. I mean, they only got 3 hits in the entire game, scored 3 runs, 2 in the 8th inning on wild pitches. And Buto comes in this game and gives up a couple runs in the 7th. He's kind of not been the force he was a couple weeks ago at the back end of the bullpen. He's coming back to life, coming back to normal. He's a little bit more erratic. He's left the zone a little bit more than when he was going at his best. As a starting pitcher, he was wild. In the bullpen, he's been great. He's reverting back to a little bit being too wild, but, you know, you'll live with it. He's been great. He gave up 2 runs in this game, and they come right back in the 8th to get 2 on wild pitches. But offensively, they have not been the force they were when they were building up this record. This 9-game winning streak and now 10 out of 11 have been built on starting pitching. Whether it's Severino, who, you know, pitched pretty damn well and fairly well even in the loss the other day, but Severino, Manaea, obviously Peterson. And now even McGill making a spot start gives you 6 innings of one-hit baseball. Like, they have just figured, right now they are pitching as good as any team in the sport. And when you turn and you look at the Atlanta Braves can't score runs against Cincinnati, and you've completely jumped them. I mean, it was, what, 2 weeks ago I was sitting in here with Sean, and the Mets were 4 games back of Atlanta. They have made up 5 games in 2 weeks. And for me, what I've been saying about the Mets this whole time was they were so reliant on their offense that the starting pitching was pretty good and it wasn't going to kill you, but you needed to score a bunch of runs and the Mets needed to pound the baseball if they were going to win. And now what you're seeing, although Diaz, I thought, almost gave up an opposite field home run to blow the game, he didn't, but he settled in since the disaster against Arizona. And this starting pitching is just remarkable no matter who pitches. I mean, David Peterson is having the best stretch of his career. Manaea is having the best stretch of his career. And Severino's reverted back to being the ace starting pitcher he was at the New York Yankees. Like, right now, this team can beat you in any way. You turn it into a bullpen game, you feel fairly confident. You need runs in the 8th inning after blowing it in the 7th, you feel fairly confident. You're gonna put up zeros throughout this game. You feel your starting pitching can match. Like, there is no flat out weakness to this team at the moment. There are some less strengths than others, but there is no real weakness you can point to and say that's gonna kill them. Like, defensively, they're fine. Offensively, they're not a juggernaut anymore, but they're fine. They can lose McNeil and have Iglesias step in. And their starting pitching is the best in the league and is on a heater right now, right at the right time. So, I mean, right now, as a Met fan, I am feeling uber confident. They have made up ground to the point where they are only, I think, what is it, 1.5 or 2.5 games back? Let me double check that. They're like 2.5 games back of Arizona for the second wild card. I mean, they are playing as well, I mean, 10 out of 11, bounce right back, and that's always the most important thing. When you have a long winning streak and you win 9 games in a row and it ends, I mean, they're 2.5, is it 2.5? 1 game back, that's it. I'm sorry, I'm way off. I thought it was either 1.5 or 2.5. They are 1 game behind Arizona, 1.5 behind San Diego, who has now lost 2 in a row. But when you win 9 straight games and play the way they played, and then you have the hiccup, and you lose a game against Cincinnati, you've got to come right back. You don't want to now have a 2-game losing streak. You don't want to start losing ground in that 9 game. And they come right back. They rally for 2 runs in the 8th, albeit Toronto giving it to them. Don't care. Doesn't matter. And they get right back on the winning ways, and they are now 10-1 in their last 11 games, 9-1 in their last 10. They've made up 5 games on Atlanta, and they are secure in their third wild card standings with 1.5 games between them and the first wild card, and who's playing better than them. This is going to be a fun pennant. I mean, right now, we talk about how great it is between the last couple days' weather, football season starting, and both the Mets and Yankees in a playoff push. This time last year, my first year in the overnight, we didn't even talk baseball. Baseball was dead. We were fully focused on what the Jets were going to do with Aaron Rodgers down after four snaps.
Football was dead last year. This time,
it's true. I know. We were fully focused on the Giants getting pounded 40-0 by the Cowboys. All we had was football, and now we've got, hopefully, even though both teams are currently 0-1, we have a Jets team that you have faith in will be a road favorite next week, a Giants team that's playing the one team they've had any kind of success against over the last 5 or 6 years in the Daniel Jones era, and you got two baseball teams right now, a game plus up for the division and the wild card with 17 to play, or 18 to play. This is as fun a time as we can have. This is as good as it gets. Embrace it. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. We can do a little baseball if you'd like. Obviously, still talking Jets and Giants, too, as we take you all the way to 5 o'clock in the warm show. McMonagle here with you on The Fan.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
New England has no timeouts remaining. 23 seconds to play, and the Jets are going officially now to the AFC Championship game against the Pittsburgh Steelers.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
All right, 3:33. McMonagle here with you. Hey, little Jimmy Eat World at 3:30 in the morning. The other thing that happened in the game with the Jets last night is, for whatever reason, Sauce Gardner had like a brief time on the bench. And, you know, they noticed it in the broadcast. They mentioned it. And the sideline reporter said, well, you know, he's healthy and nothing physically wrong with him. And it scared everybody for a while. Now, I don't know. In the post game, Robert Saleh said, and you could help me know, Rami, if I'm leaving anything out. In the post game, which I caught a little bit of and had to run here, unfortunately, that he just needed to catch his breath. Now, I don't know what that means. They asked if he like got his, you know, his wind knocked out of him. Saleh didn't really even give an answer to that. Just like, no, I think he's fine. So I don't know if he was just exhausted. I don't know if he got the wind knocked out of him. I don't know if there was a reason other than that that he's on the bench. I didn't see anything of any sort of reason to bench someone on anything that would deserve disciplinary actions. He didn't throw a punch, as far as I could tell, watching the game. I don't think he made any business decisions out there that they might have been uncomfortable with, especially at that point in the game. It was kind of still early, and the game was in the, you know, still in a spot where you thought the Jets could still get back into the game. But I'm not sure why he wasn't on the sidelines. Catch his breath. He seemed pretty, seemed like he was breathing just fine.
And that's all they said.
Yeah,
he
that's
walking
it.
Around on the sideline, like pacing out. I didn't see anything else.
Yeah, I didn't see anything else either. And he played well to start the game. You got Troy Aikman calling him clearly the best cornerback in football.
And he was out for a while when
it was way
on one
too
of those long,
long
yeah. Niners drives.
Yeah.
There were two long drives. One of them, CJ was, Mosley was out for a bunch of it.
Right.
And one of them, Sauce, was out for a bunch of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, he had a wrist, but he's fine, right? CJ Mosley.
CJ's
had a
fine.
Wrist.
He came back in.
Yeah. But the Jets got overrun. E. Frank in Astoria. What's up, E. Frank?
Yeah, what's up, C-Mac? I'm glad to hear you back on the air here.
Oh, yeah. No, I've been back. We're ready to go.
Yeah. So I think that the Jets are ready to go as well. I think that they're doing very well. Just I'm judging them on the way they performed last night. But I think there's a problem with, as you said, Mr. Gardner, Sauce, C.J. Mosley, and Aaron Rodgers. They keep... I noticed that... that Coach Saleh is trying to prevent injuries. I mean, you might think that this is not a strategy that's part of professional football playing, but, you know, I see that they would take them out at certain times during the whole game. He didn't want to have a situation where there would be a season-ending injury for any of these three players.
Yeah, I mean,
you know,
Clearly, and thank you for the quality, Frank. Clearly, Aaron Rodgers doesn't play the final drive of the game when it's out of hand, which is understandable. Mosley left the field with a wrist injury and went back to the tent or whatever and was examined before being allowed back into the game. I don't remember. I mean, that's not just like, hey, let's do some preventative benching. I don't know if Salah's actually done that. I didn't notice any of that. And I mean, if that's your opinion on what happened with Sauce Gardner, that they just felt like, hey, let's take a break here. You've been playing too much, or you know, you took a physical hit there. Let's relax for a little bit. I'd be surprised if that were the case. I don't know what happened. I got to be honest with you. The idea that it's, you know, he needed to catch his breath seems weird to me. It looked like he was breathing just fine on the sidelines. Val in the Bronx. What's up, Val?
Brother Mac, how you doing, Dunn?
Good, buddy. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm all right. I'm not too good because my Jets lost. You know,
yes.
I got two things I want to talk to you about real quick. The okay. Jets, real quick. I'm going to say it and I'm going to leave it alone. I like your perspective because I feel like, and I heard a lot of people saying stuff like, you know, he should have tried to stop the run. But with everything that San Fran had to throw at you, you know, he was probably tempted to even try to do that because, God forbid, he had thrown like seven in the box to try to stop that. They would have probably went prolific on the other side with, you know, then Debo and Ayuk and them would have started going crazy too. So, and he probably tried to play thinking that they weren't going to play the run tonight because they didn't have McCaffrey. So,
right. But you got to make the adjustment once you, I mean, that's not an excuse for Salah though, because you got to make the adjustment. You can't just allow them to just run it down your throat. At least if the passing game beats you, you give your offense some time. I mean, the time of possession was just killing them.
There you go. But I like what you said about Aaron, so I'm going to leave it alone because, you know, I want to see what we do next weekend. But to get to why I really call, you know, some of what you said with the Yankees, and I feel good about everything that happened today, but I want to say this. You know, you said something about Dominguez, and not that you poo-pooed it, but I understand you and I see your perspective where you're coming from as far as it not being the major thing. You know, because everybody's going to, like, I know there were going to be a bunch of calls with the Verdugo. He pushed Verdugo, and he got Verdugo to hit the homer. It's not only about that. It's about, like, you know, last week when we spoke, and I think it was the off day, and I told you I want to get a feel for how they start the Chicago series and what the dugout looks like.
Yeah.
The energy I'm feeling right now is kind of the energy I wanted to feel on Friday when they started the Chicago series. It's a little bit late, but whatever, because it feels like, you know, with everything, not just the Verdugo stuff and the Dominguez thing, while it was kind of, you know, you saw it happen. Dominguez created the run,
yep.
And here comes Verdugo now feeling like, you know, maybe I got to do something. If that pushed him, whatever that did, who knows? But the whole team, because who's to say that even Rodon's start and the composure that he showed today and the poise was because, you know, he knows that Heal just came back. He knows that Schmidt just came back and had a nice performance. Like, the whole team, Birdie just came up, and you heard, like, Waldman was talking to him in the pregame. Like, the, you know, Oswaldo played, you know, to give Volpe a rest at short tonight.
Yeah.
Oswaldo played a decent short and had a contributing night tonight as well. So everybody feels like, it's almost like you said, like, they have the, while we might not be all the individually the best at our positions everywhere, we have the best that we have to right now. You even heard Hamilton, you know, in the bullpen, like, warming up and stuff like that. So everybody's out there. People know now, like, you know, you can't – there's a certain urgency that's brought on by that competition, and it could only be a beautiful thing. You know what I'm saying?
No, competition, I agree with that. But it's just, like, the idea of, like, a lot of people
were – carried away with it, but, like, all across the board, I just feel like now guys know, you know, even Chisholm, for all you know, the little tense move that he had early on – and that error that he had to Rizzo, maybe because he knows now he's so burnt. So, you know, like, everybody knows, like, I got to show myself now. I got to play up. You know what I mean? Because the clubhouse.
Yeah, but you're saying it led to an error with Jazz.
Well, no, like, you know, that could just be a little tension right there, whatever it is like that. But at least, you know, because he had a decent game. Like, everybody knows they have to play up now. Whether, you know, like how they say, what they say, pressure makes diamonds.
Yes.
You know, or sometimes it either bust pipes or it makes diamonds. Like right now, we going to see. Everybody got to feel it.
I agree, Val. But to me, it's more about just having your best roster available. Jason Dominguez is a better hitter, or at least has proven to be. Brings speed, plays center field. He's a more valuable piece than what we've gotten from Verdugo. Like that it's just that simple. It's just that simple. And the idea, like, I'm not opposed to the idea of competition. Of course, I agree with all of what you just said. But my only thing is, like, people were taking bows saying, oh, Jason, look at that. Dominguez is here, and suddenly Verdugo's worried about his job, and here comes the home run. And, okay, maybe that's true, but are you saying that Dominguez should be on this team just to get the best out of Verdugo? I don't want to get the best out of Verdugo. I want to replace Verdugo. Like, if Dominguez hasn't been ready that long, it's been a few weeks, if that. It's been a week and a half, and I've been screaming about it and yelled about it. And when Brian Cashman came out the other day and said the nonsense he said about Verdugo gives him the best chance to win, I was like, how could you possibly think that? Like, it made no sense to not have him, but he's here now. And we got to either, you know, say we got to use it as a way to knock the franchise. Instead of being excited that Dominguez is here, it's all, why wasn't he here earlier? Makes no sense. Look, you see, if you idiots would have brought him up earlier, Verdugo would have been better. Well, if Verdugo's been better, then Dominguez doesn't play. It's like a catch-22. Dave in Westchester. What's up, Dave?
Yeah, hi, Chris. I just wanted to say, you know, there was a Sauce Gardner being on the sidelines. There was a play where it was Buck or Aikman, I can't remember which, said, oh, he's getting up slowly. I think it was after he tackled Jennings on a completed pass. And he was on his knees on the ground for a while, then he got up. After that, so I think he, I don't know what happened, whether he, you know, he got the wind knocked out of him or something. But it was weird because he was out for a while, but I think that's probably what happened.
All right, yeah. That's what he said. I don't think the coach, I'm not accusing the coach of lying. It just seemed odd, that's all. Because they said it was nothing physical and nothing's wrong with him. And then it was, I guess he got the wind knocked out of him. I'm sure that's what happened, but it just seemed odd. And it was a scary moment in the game because you're like, why is Sauce Gardner not in there? He's clearly a very important piece to the defense as they're getting bombarded. It was just odd. Eddie in Rockland. What's up, Eddie?
Hey, Chris. What's happening?
Hey, man? What's going on?
Man, both my rib cages feel like they got kicked in. One with the Giants, one with the Jets, and the Rams give me a kick right in the rear end also. But, you know that song, Isn't It Ironic? Who sings that
song? Don't
you
think?
You know that song? Yeah,
it's a little too ironic.
Yeah, Isn't it ironic that
Alanis Morissette
is one jet drive, and that's all they had was one jet drive.
Well, they had two, and then the third one, but with Tyrod Taylor, woo, a real backup. I hear you. They had one main. They had one real drive of the game.
Yeah. On a serious note,
yes.
You're a sports guy. You played a lot of sports. I never questioned any of your, you know,
athletic prowess. Yes.
Right. Whatever it is, it is. My point is, you can't see the level of different coaching between the Giants and the Vikings and the Jets and the 49ers. The play calling, the design, the everything. You can't see the difference. It's on totally different level.
Yeah, I mean, you keep saying play design like you're an expert at it. And let me just tell you, I watched a bunch of clips today on social media, on Twitter and everything, of Daniel Jones. And I saw a bunch of plays. Now, while they were not the most elegant play design I've ever seen or belong in the Football Hall of Fame, I saw wide receivers running open. And I saw a quarterback unable to get them the football. So it makes it a hell of a lot harder. It makes it a hell of a lot harder to come up with these unbelievable play designs when the defense doesn't trust the quarterback or fear the quarterback in any way, shape, or form. And the quarterback can't make the easiest of throws. So, and then I watched the 49ers game. Sure, they were scared. I mean, you don't think the Jets called up some plays? They had a 30-yard touchdown play on a free play down the middle. He hit guys outside. I mean, I don't think the game came down to play design.
Bears, Chris?
Yeah.
Where's the 85 Bears?
No, they got completely. That had nothing. I don't know, want to say nothing to do with game plan.
They're supposed to be, a better defense than last year they were crowing about
I don't know.
A few weeks ago.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, last year they were saying the 85 Bears. I don't know if they said that this year. They got beat up. They got out-physicaled, out-toughed. They got overrun. Listen, Shanahan's a great coach, and he came up with a good offensive scheme for the run game, no doubt about it, and he did it with a backup running back. But I don't think last night's game was about game plan. I on some level it is, sure. The 49ers kicked the crap out of the Jets up front. Their offensive line dominated. That's just what happened. They got overrun, and they couldn't stop anything. And it wasn't so much, I mean, they were running the same similar plays. Like, it wasn't all of it. Like, I didn't see anything where I was like, wow, that's a wrinkle they've added here in the second. They just like lined up and pounded the football down the Jets' throat. So, like, I don't know. I know you were getting on Dable for the play calling, and so did I. They didn't attack enough. I'm not saying Dable's free of blame, but I'm telling you, it makes it more difficult when Daniel Jones is the quarterback, throwing at guys' feet, missing easy layups to prolong drives, to give them options to do different things. He doesn't trust his quarterback. That's why, and with good reason. Now, the Jets didn't have a lot of time, didn't have a lot of time of possession, didn't run a lot of plays to get that creative, and then they're down trying to chase. And the run game was stifled early on. And I thought they ran the ball. I don't want to abandon the run, but I also want to attack with Aaron Rodgers. I thought they ran the ball. The first couple drives was very run on first, run on second, throw on third. Run on first, run on second, throw on third. Very formulaic a little bit. I agree with that. But ultimately, that game was lost in the trenches where the 49ers just absolutely out-physicaled the Jets. That's what happened. And the Jets are going to have to get a hell of a lot more physical.
He does grab his left shoulder after that Sauce Gardner.
He tackles on Deebo Samuel.
On Deebo,
yeah. He hits Deebo in the open field and does kind of hold his shoulder sitting down. And it didn't jump out at me that that was right around the same time period. I thought it was like a bit later. Well, but I guess the 49ers held the ball for so freaking long. It's probably the next time the substitution.
Well, the Jets got the ball back after that. That was a to force fourth down.
Yeah.
So I don't think it was the same time. By the way, the Jets defense, they've allowed now 28 points or more in 6 of their last 9 games going back to last year. So it's not new necessarily.
Right. No, I mean, listen, they're certainly not the 85 Bears. No one's saying they were the best defense in the league last year. Ravens were a better defense. Cleveland in their building was a historic defense. Like, I don't think anyone said that the Jets defense is the best in the league. I think it's good enough compared when you pair it with an Aaron Rodgers-led offense, it's good enough to win. It's a Super Bowl caliber. That is a playoff team you can win with the Jets defense. It is a solid defense that you can win with. That was not the case last night. And that's what you learned from the Jets last night. They are not ready to line up with the 49ers. They're not there yet. I thought they were. They're not. Kevin and Copag, what's up, Kevin?
Yeah, Chris, Jets, Giants. I'm spiraling right now with my Mets.
Okay,
the homestand against the Phillies, Fox to Apple to ESPN. We got 3 games, national broadcast.
Yeah.
No GKR. Oh, my God.
It's
almost like Manfred and Toria trying to kill us.
And these are important games. Is that the schedule for this weekend?
No, it's like 10 days at the homestand, the last homestand of the year.
Right.
Fox to Apple to ESPN. Oh, my God.
Yeah, Fox to Apple to ESPN on Sunday Night Baseball. Well, I mean, listen, you have Fox and ESPN, right? The only one's Apple, if you don't have Apple.
No, just the broadcasters, though. We love Keith. I mean, come on. That's the last homestand of the season.
It is what it is. You guys are playing in Philadelphia. You guys, it's good. It means the Mets were perceived to be relevant by this time of the year.
I don't know. It's like Star Wars. It's a trap.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't worry. I guess it's me. I don't know. I could care less. I don't care about broadcasts. Don't get me wrong. I think Ron Keith and Gary are as good as it gets in baseball. Don't get me wrong. And even as a Yankee fan, as much as I've had my issues with Michael Kay, you know, it is familiar. And I love hearing Paul O'Neill. But I don't care. I don't get hung up on broadcasts, so I guess it doesn't bother me that much. The ESPN broadcast does particularly stink. I think that's true. And let's be fair, too. I mean, Smoltz acts like he despises baseball, and I've never been one, ever, been one to say the national broadcaster hates my team. It's so stupid. People say it all the time, but I really feel like John Smoltz doesn't like the Yankees. I mean, that's just...
Well, my guy Raj, though, my Jets, you know, we got Will Levy, the Titans.
Yeah,
we
got
Jacoby Brissett, Bo Nix, Zach Wilson, Sam Darnold. Let's go.
I'm
those are winnable there. Games.
No, oh, of course. I mean, that was... To me, we went into this game. As much as I might have been positive and some people might have been positive and thought that the Jets had a chance to win this game, at the very least stay close to it, I've always went into it thinking the same thing. This would be, and I said it a bunch, this would be far better a win than it would be a bad loss. Like, this is the 49ers. They're arguably the best roster in all of football. They're a Super Bowl caliber team. If Brock Purdy doesn't get hurt in the NFC Championship game the year before, they might be back-to-back Super Bowl teams. Like, this is, they're as good as it gets. They're as well coached as it gets. They have as many weapons. They have they're as good at the line of scrimmage as anyone in football. Like, this is a very good opponent to go into their building and try and win a football game. And if they were to ever be able to pull it off, then they would thrust themselves into the conversation of real Super Bowl contender. But if they lost it, depending on how they lost it, you could say, hey, you know, the 49ers are very tough. It's the first game of the year. It's Aaron Rodgers' first full game, you know, thankfully, and he did make it through. It's Aaron Rodgers' first full game with the Jets. Like, it's gonna take a little bit of time. And while you don't like to see the defense overrun, I'm not trying to make mistakes. They gave they gave up points on 8 straight possessions. The time of possession was damn near doubled. They gave up 140 runs, 400 yards total, and what was it, 140 rushing yards to the backup running back, Jordan Mason, after finding out that Christian McCaffrey wasn't going to play the game. They got embarrassed defensively. That is absolutely true. But that doesn't change the fact that, yes, they're going to be 4-point road favorites next week in Tennessee, and they are playing a bunch of winnable games until, what is it, Buffalo? Like, they are playing a bunch of winnable games for the next 4 or 5 weeks. And we might be talking about a 4-1 team that lost one game to the best roster in the sport.
The schedule is at Tennessee, home Patriots, home Broncos, London for the Vikings,
right
before the Bills game. Yeah,
before the Bills game. I mean, these are all extremely winnable games going up against questionable quarterbacks and rosters. And I know the Patriots won a game against Cincinnati. I still think they're going to be one of the worst teams in football.
Even after the Bills game, Steelers and Patriots, like,
right,
that shouldn't scare you.
No, Steelers have a very good defense, but no, yeah, shouldn't scare
you. They had, what, 5 field goals on Sunday?
Yeah. Well, Russell Wilson might be back by then, but we'll see.
Because that's so much better.
It probably is. I think he is better.
Did you see that? Did you like that he wore pads even though he was non-active?
Yeah, I know. Well, that's him. Interesting guy, that Russell Wilson. But, yeah, no, the schedule is very favorable for the Jets. I think we could be looking at a 5-1 football team in 6 weeks, thinking about, hey, wait until they play another great opponent to see if they measure up. Like, that's what, right now, they're not ready. And it's on the coach for not having them ready. It's on the coach for not coming up with a game plan in the second half to allow that drive out of the halftime to be and look exactly like every other drive, getting run down their throats. That's a no adjustment. Totally agree. But I saw a lot of the things I needed to see offensively, and still it's a dominant football team and one of the best rosters in the sport that you went into their building and you weren't ready to hang week one. Like, I am not that hung up on this Jets loss. I'm really not. It's a frustrating loss, and the defense has to start proving they're as good as they think they are. And for the coach, no question, a huge F for him, considering this is his defense, this is his baby, the offense is run by Aaron Rodgers and the offensive coordinator. This is where this head coach makes his impact on the team. That and, I, you know, in-game decisions and just overall readiness. And he failed miserably on the readiness, and his defense got embarrassed. So coach, which is as questionable a thing on this team, when you look to grade this game, coach gets an F. Defense gets an F. That's not how you're looking to start the year, but it is just the start of the year against the best team you'll play all year. And maybe it's a wake-up call, as they were saying in the postgame, as Bart was saying in the postgame, and I completely agree. Maybe it's a wake-up call to say, hey, we aren't just good enough to lay our hats on the field with Aaron Rodgers as the quarterback and beat whoever. We're still going to have to go out there and play our best. And maybe that bodes well for a bounce-back win against Tennessee next week. We'll have to see. 888-808-1019. 2 hours down. Maury, I'll hang with you. We'll come back. Take your phone calls all the way to 5 o'clock in the warm-up show. McMonagle here with you on the Fan.